missiles target Kyiv as visiting African leaders push Ukraine and Russia for peace.
Their welcome to the Ukrainian capital was amid smoke and sirens. The leaders were seen entering a hotel to use its air raid shelter.
Plus, NATO leaders meet for a second day about how to support Ukraine and debate its bid for membership in the military alliance.
If there were guarantees before the war is over, then clearly that could incentivize Russia to start a war with all of NATO. However, if you say that Ukraine can't join until the war is over, that could also incentivize Russia to stay in Ukraine indefinitely. So it's a really, really difficult situation for leaders.
And later in the program, a former Ukrainian POW and his wife are in the U.S., describing life as a prisoner of Russian forces. Today is Friday, June 16th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Lori London in Washington. An air raid alert was issued in the Ukrainian capital of Kyiv and the Kyiv region on Friday, as presidents from several African countries, including South Africa and Zambia, arrived for a two-day mission to mediate between Kyiv and Moscow. David Doyle with Reuters begins our coverage.
At least two explosions rocked Kyiv on Friday as African leaders arrived on a mission of peace. The delegation, including leaders from South Africa, Senegal and Zambia, hopes to mediate between Russia and Ukraine. But their welcome to the Ukrainian capital was amid smoke and sirens. The leaders were seen entering a hotel to use its air raid shelter. The all clear was later issued. South Africa's presidency tweeted that the mission was proceeding well and as planned. The African leaders began their trip by visiting Bucha. It is the town outside Kyiv, where Ukraine says Russian occupiers carried out executions, rapes, and torture. International investigators are collecting evidence of possible war crimes. Russia denies the allegations. According to a draft framework document, the peace mission could propose a series of confidence-building measures during initial efforts at mediation. That might include, for the Ukrainian side, a pullback of Russian troops and the removal of tactical nuclear weapons from Belarus. The document indicated that the implementation of an International Criminal Court arrest warrant targeting Vladimir Putin could be suspended, and relief given from Western sanctions imposed on Russia. An agreement on the cessation of hostilities could follow, it said, and would need to be accompanied by negotiations between Russia and the West. Kyiv says its own peace initiative, which envisages the withdrawal of Russian troops from Ukrainian land, must be the basis for any settlement of the war. After meeting with President Volodymyr Zelensky on Friday, the African delegation will head to St. Petersburg on Saturday for talks with Putin.
David Doyle with Reuters. And for more on what we know about these latest missile strikes, we hear from Anna Chernikova in Kyiv.
It was quite an unusual, I should say, attack on Kyiv, because it happened not over the night. It happened in the morning. It started around 11 o'clock local time in the morning. There were explosions heard in the city of Kyiv. Even more explosions were heard at the outskirts of the capital. Ukrainian Air Force confirmed that it was not just a cruise missiles attack, but it was also a ballistic attack. In total, six ballistic Kinjal missiles were destroyed today in the sky of the city of Kyiv and Kyiv region, in addition to another six cruise missiles, caliber cruise missiles, and two drones as well. The drones were used for intelligence purposes by the Russian forces this time. There were no damages in the capital itself, due to the fact that all missiles were destroyed mostly at the outskirts of the city, but there are damages in the Kyiv region. Unfortunately, the main damages happen in the private sector, and there are even complete destruction of the private houses in the Kyiv region. In total, Kyiv region authorities confirmed that around 30 buildings were affected. Three are completely destroyed. 13 buildings need very deep reconstruction, and 15 buildings were just slightly damaged. Four people are injured, two children and two adults, but for the moment we do not have any information regarding people killed due to this attack.
Of course, these attacks came just as the African leaders, as we said, were coming to talk about ways to end the war.
Today in the morning, life in Kyiv began with the announcement of the visit of African country leaders, and part of the city was blocked in terms of traffic due to this delegation visit. It's quite a big delegation. So president of South Africa arrived, also presidents of Zambia, Senegal, Conor Island, the prime minister of Egypt, and head of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Uganda. They all visited the city of Bucha next to Kyiv, where the most atrocities happened during the occupation by Russian forces. And also they have a meeting with President Zelensky today in Kyiv and with Ukrainian official representatives. For the moment, we do not have additional details. The visit is still ongoing, but we are expecting to get some more details soon.
Anna Chernikova reporting for VOA from Kyiv. U.S. General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, attending NATO meetings in Brussels, briefed reporters on these early stages of Ukraine's counteroffensive. Associated Press Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
The Pentagon's top officer says it's too soon to judge the effects of Ukraine's long-anticipated counteroffensive against Russia.
They are making steady progress.
At a news conference in Brussels, where he and Pentagon Chief Lloyd Austin met with other nations supplying arms to Ukraine, Joint Chiefs Chair Mark Milley said this will be a very hard fight.
It is a very violent fight. And it will likely take a considerable amount of time and at high cost.
For both sides.
This is a war.
Austin says both militaries will lose people and equipment, noting Moscow's eagerly showing off destroyed Ukrainian vehicles.
That same five vehicles about 1,000 times from 10 different angles.
Austin says the key will be who can sustain their gear the longest.
The Ukrainians still have a lot of combat capability, combat power.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
Russian President Vladimir Putin said Friday that Ukraine would soon run out of its own military equipment, making it totally reliant on hardware supplied by the West. Putin told an economic forum in St. Petersburg that Ukraine had failed to make progress in its counteroffensive and said its army had no chance against Russia's. Meanwhile, NATO defense ministers from about 50 nations met at NATO headquarters for a second day on Friday to discuss Kyiv's current needs following the start of its latest counteroffensive. Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg underlined the threat posed by Russian President Vladimir Putin.
With President Putin's war of aggression against Ukraine, we face the most serious threat to Euro-Atlantic security for a generation. We currently have over 40,000 troops under direct NATO command, with many more on high alert, all backed by significant air and maritime assets.
I spoke with VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb, who was in Brussels traveling with the U.S. Defense Secretary. Carla, you have some updates on discussions about Ukraine's bid to join NATO. What are you hearing?
Officials say leaders are going to be weighing a proposal from NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg that would let Ukraine forego a formal candidacy process that has been required by some nations to join. This formal process is called MAP. It stands for Membership Action Plan, and it's a plan that Sweden and Finland were not forced to complete. As you know, Finland is now the 31st member of NATO, and Sweden is still waiting on Hungary and Turkey to approve their application. Many nations, especially Eastern European nations, for obvious reasons, feel that the Ukrainians should have an easier ascension or an easier pathway to joining NATO. And so, you know, that's the back and forth that we're going to be hearing. They're going to be discussing the time frame of Ukraine's ascension. Some feel that guarantees should come before the war's end. Others feel that that would only intensify the standoff with Russia. Zelensky, as you know, has demanded that Ukraine swiftly join NATO as it battles Russia in a symbolic fight for sovereignty and democracy. But there are a lot of concerns by some of the nations here because they really do not want to poke the Russian bear.
Because if Ukraine joins and is a part of NATO, then it would seem like that would really escalate the war because NATO would get more involved, right?
Exactly. So, you know, if there were guarantees before the war is over, then clearly that could incentivize Russia to start a war with all of NATO. However, if you say that Ukraine can't join until the war is over, that could also incentivize Russia to stay in Ukraine indefinitely. So it's a really, really difficult situation for leaders. And so that's why the time frame is so ambiguous at this time.
What's the latest with Turkey continuing to block Sweden? Has there been any breakthrough there?
Yeah. So, yeah, we've seen Hungary and Turkey, you know, stay put on, you know, not approving Sweden. I have been told by officials that Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin is going to be having a pull aside with the new Turkish defense minister, that this will be his first time attending one of these meetings. And I know that Sweden's accession is going to be part of the discussion, because the U.S. and many in NATO, everybody except for Turkey and Hungary, feel that Sweden should be in already and definitely by the Vilnius summit in July. Turkey very much so wants F-16s from the United States. And we just saw in Congress just this week, Congress blocked Hungary's ability to get HIMARS because they're upset over Sweden. So we can only imagine that Congress is going to continue to block any sort of idea of selling F-16s to Turkey until they allow Sweden to come into NATO. Is this something that the military will press? I don't know. But this is definitely something that has to be in the back of Turkey's mind as it tries to get F-16s, and as it tries to still push Sweden for additional reforms.
There's been a lot of talk about who will replace Jens Stoltenberg at the end of his term, or when he's potentially supposed to leave, but I understand there may be a new development there.
Well, Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg was asked by reporters whether or not he would consider extending his tenure as Secretary General. He said he has no plans to do so. He's not focused on doing that. But there are people that want him and think that he may need to extend for 6 months to 12 months. And here's why. A lot of it has to do with politics and the current instability security situation across Eastern Europe with the war in Ukraine. But the politics of this and what Secretary General Stoltenberg is trying to get NATO members to do is to spend more on defense spending. Back in 2014, NATO had a summit. It was the Wales summit, and they all agreed that 2% of GDP spending should be the goal for defense spending. Here we are in 2023, and only 7 NATO countries have actually hit that 2% spending of GDP on defense. So what Stoltenberg now is trying to get from defense leaders is a guarantee that the 2% wish is not considered the goal, but it's the floor, the minimum, not the ceiling. That's what he says. And he doesn't know what the new number should be that NATO countries should aspire to, providing in defense spending. But he does say that the security situation has changed drastically across Europe, and it requires more money for defense. Bottom line, this is a very difficult job. You're having to wrangle 31 different countries and try to get them to agree on different defense things. It's a very difficult position. So it's going to take a strong leader to replace him. He's got big shoes to fill.
VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb reporting from Brussels. Finland's accession to NATO and Sweden's bid for membership have turned the Baltic region into a stronghold of alliance forces, a new political military scenario very different from the one that existed prior to Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Marcus Harton narrates this report from Ricardo Marquina in the Estonian capital.
German and British fighters prepare for routine control of the Estonian skies as part of the NATO air policing mission that has been underway since 2004. But there's an important new addition. Finnish planes are now participating. Finland's accession to the North Atlantic Alliance creates a new scenario in the region. That's what Vesa Vasara, Finland's ambassador to Estonia, says.
Our joining Finland and Sweden is important for the defense of NATO in the Baltic Sea region, and mind you, in the Arctic as well.
Observers say Estonia's security, like that of other Baltic countries, depends on the direct support of its Western partners. Viljar Viebel is a researcher at the Department of Political and Strategic Studies at the Baltic Defense College in Estonia.
Our own military capabilities are very limited. So if you say that we have 24 self-propelling howitzers, so it's no tanks, no airplanes, no warships, so it's no fighting helicopters.
For this reason, for the tiny Estonian Navy, the accession of Finland, its Baltic neighbor, is a safeguard that puts limits on Russia's ability to operate freely in these waters. But analysts also warn it does not mean that Russian forces will stay out of the region. Ardo Ryben is commander of the Estonian Naval Operations Center.
Yeah, we have to keep that in mind, that there is still freedom of navigation, and even for Russian Federation, we can't deny it somehow. but to conduct different kind of operations, trainings, so on, it's going to be much easier.
Moscow has not ceased its activities in the area, as Robert Stedman, a British defense attaché in Estonia, explained.
We continue to see activity at sea, and we continue to see activity in the air. With our air policing mission, there have been a number of intercepts of Russian aircraft in international airspace.
For the Estonian authorities, the accession of Finland and the bid by Sweden are good news, but they also note that Moscow is taking countermeasures. Hanno Pevkur, Estonia's defense minister, spoke to VOA.
We see already that they are building new divisions, new corps here in our neighborhood. But nevertheless, yes, we clearly understand that this is a countermeasures of that that Finland and Sweden are joining NATO.
Finland and Sweden applied for membership following Russia's invasion of Ukraine last year. Finland has since joined the alliance, but Sweden's status remains in limbo. Turkey has linked Sweden's accession to stricter counterterrorism measures. NATO accession requires the approval of all member states. Analysts agree the Baltic is now a sea virtually under the control of Western powers, an unexpected twist brought about by Russia's full-scale assault on Ukraine. For Ricardo Marquina in Tallinn, Marcus Harton, VOA News.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. When people learn how Russian forces treat Ukrainian POWs, they're genuinely shocked, says Arseniy Fedosyuk, a member of Ukraine's Azov Brigade, Mariupol defender, and former POW. He and his wife were recently in the U.S. describing life as prisoner of Russian forces. Tatiana Vorosko has the story.
On June 11, Ukraine and Russia swapped about 200 prisoners, including Ukrainian soldiers who fought at the Azovstal steel plant in Mariupol. Arseniy Fedosyuk also fought at the Azovstal plant, was taken captive by Russian forces in May of 2022 and released 7 months later.
People get shocked when I show them what our fighters look like after they get released by Russians.
Now he and his wife, Yulia Fedosyuk, are in the U.S. talking about what he faced while he was in captivity.
The feeling of hopelessness, knowing we can't save them, can't do anything. We had high hopes for an evacuation, for extradition to a third country.
After his capture, Fedosyuk and his fellow fighters were taken to a prison outside the village of Alenivka in the Donetsk region, where he says they were interrogated and tortured. In July of 2022, a fire at the prison killed more than 50 people. Yulia Fedosyuk desperately tried to learn about her husband's fate.
There was no way to communicate with them. The only thing we had was a video of charred corpses. Some women recognized their loved ones among the dead.
Based on the list where everyone was from the Azov regiment, they collected people and resettled them in the industrial part of this prison. 3 days later, they set off an explosion at night when people slept, and because of this explosion, over 50 people died, and whoever did not die was wounded.
Those who survived, including Fedosyuk, were taken to other prisons.
During the day, we were not allowed to lie down or sit on the bed. We were given just enough food to stay alive. We counted how nutritious it was. 600 calories a day was good.
Fedosyuk finally came home in late December 2020 and was sent to a Sumy hospital. His wife says the recovery will be long.
He looks like a healthy man, but he has stomach issues, back issues, leg issues.
Федосюк is going through rehabilitation and plans to go back to the front lines after he recovers. But for now, the couple is in the U.S., trying to bring international attention to Russia's treatment of Ukrainian POWs. About 700 Mariupol defenders from the Azov Brigade remain in Russian captivity. Tatiana Voroshko, VOA News, Washington.
A nonprofit in Washington is helping refugees around the world learn English. Ksenia Turkova met with some Ukrainians who moved to the nation's capital and are learning English.
Before Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Natalia Cherevko, an English-to-speakers of other languages specialist, owned a language school in Chernihiv. The invasion forced Cherevko to leave, heading first to France and then to the United States through its Uniting for Ukraine program.
When I came here, I was desperate. I didn't know what I would do, wash dishes. I was ready to do anything, but I thought I would never get to teach English again.
Cherevko sent her resume to dozens of language schools in Washington and soon got a response and a job offer. The Washington English Center was looking for a specialist just like her. Today, Cherevko is teaching volunteers. The nonprofit Washington English Center was founded 3 decades ago to help refugees from El Salvador and other Central American countries. Since then, it has helped refugees from more than 100 countries and has over 800 teacher volunteers.
They connect with their community and they connect with people from around the world, but they also feel like they're putting a very welcoming face on Washington, D.C., especially in light of where so many of our students are coming from.
Ukrainian Oleksandra Mamontova has been in Washington for 6 months. In Ukraine, she worked as an accountant. In order to get a job in the U.S., she said she wants to become highly proficient in English.
It was so hard for me to speak English because I didn't use the English language for 20 years. I studied English in school and in university, but it was 20 years ago, so maybe I didn't have a practice at all, so it was really hard for me to speak.
Unlike Mamontova, Lubomir, a student who gave only his first name from Kolomea, never learned English. It's his second semester at the Washington English Center.
My everyday English is fine. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing some things, but people understand me, and I understand them.
To give students a chance to hear various accents, teachers occasionally rotate classes.
So over the course of the week, the student hears from 8 different teachers. Some of them are loud talkers like I am, some of them are very quiet talkers, some of them are older, younger, maybe they're from the South or they're from, you know, Massachusetts. And so the students hear a variety of accents and pronunciation.
Lessons here are not free, but many students receive a stipend that covers the cost. The center also tries to help those who are temporarily unable to pay. Ksenia Turkova for VOA News, Washington.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage of Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com and on social media. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thank you so much for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Lori London.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.